There isn't a smidgen of respect for the laws or the sovereign people from the imperial president and Harry Reid's parliament. There isn't even a smidgen of resistance to unconstitutional state power from the rhinos, at least not beyond mere rhetoric. But there is a smidgen of conservative resistance to imperialism and unconstitutional power grabs in the GOP. 2014 is the year to grow the ranks of the real conservatives, send in support, reinforcements, and create a force multiplier of grassroots conservative activism. Obama isn't the problem. He's just a socialist meat puppet. Democrats aren't the problem. They are all out in the open statists. The problem is the rhinos, Republicans in name only, who feign conservatism and promote a statist Democrat agenda, corporatist and Keynesian to the core. Focus up. To be effective sovereign citizens, you have to do far more than just show up and vote. You have to know what authentic conservatism really is, which is two-thirds libertarian, properly understood. You also have to learn, acquire, and implement tactics and strategies right now to further the conservative cause of liberty. As the impotent Congress, nuked by Harry Reid and unopposed by the bend-over Republicans, avoids debate and shutdowns by passing trillion-dollar deficit budgets, farm bills that have nothing to do with farming, unstoppable quantitative easing by the new female, sort of, Federal Reserve, while pretending to negotiate over a non-existent debt ceiling, paving the way for legalizing millions of undocumented Democrats and gearing up for war, war, and more war. They hope you won't notice that they're actually up for re-election. 2014 is now, not in November. Now is the time to expel the rhinos and grow the conservative ranks, or witness how liberty dies to the sound of thunderous applause buried underneath mountains of worthless debt money. You have a choice. Work hard now to further liberty by having real conservatives and real libertarians take over the GOP, or watch the statists in both parties push their corporatist agenda to their benefit and our demise. Now is the last chance to stop those who want to fundamentally transform our republic into an empire abroad and a police state at home. End the destruction of our economy by the Republican-Democrat duopoly and their Keynesian masters at the Federal Reserve by standing with the real conservatives to defeat the cultural Marxists, the statists, collectivists, oligarchs, useful idiots, and their fellow travelers, especially the Democrat socialists. First, you must crush the rhinos for liberty. You are live on Liberty's Thunder, Liberty's Thursday, with Rex and Trog, irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex Myra, broadcasting from the Imperial City. Doctor?
Did you just say Myra?
Yeah, Rex Myra. That's my new name.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, Mrs. Trog, what a week. I don't know if people have been paying attention or if it's typical overload or what, but coming out of the Super Bowl and Bill O'Reilly's interview of the president, and then trying to follow, the people that I try to keep an eye on that report good information, whether it's economics, Peter Schiff, or people going after things that the president said. I just finally got to the Trey Gowdy clip where he was in the House and had Jay Sekulow there, who is represents 42 clients on this IRS issue. And he was going off, going, how could this guy, the president, claim that the investigation's over and nothing's been found and everything's wonderful and nobody was targeted, when the investigation is still ongoing and 42 of Sekulow's clients had not even been interviewed yet. I mean, it is mind-boggling to me some days what the imperial president gets away with and how they cover for him when the whole thing is falling apart. You pick any subject, IRS, pick, that's a mess, that's full of debacle and smoke and mirrors. You pick immigration, amnesty, You know, the borders, you want to, you know, whatever topic you want to pick, Obamacare. I just read an article that it's so bad and that he's thinking about going in with executive fiat and changing the law again unconstitutionally to run the individual mandate out for potentially 3 years. Oh, my gosh. You know, I listened to Newt. Some great speeches of Newt on his breakout on his book, because it's like everything we do, never enough time to you know, to follow through on everything you want to follow through on. So I sit down last night and plugged in my laptop to the big screen with my son and sat back and listened to it, and I'm just going, what a breath of fresh air. Solutions, real solutions to real problems. And I'm thinking, every day, all we hear is insanity. A lot of what I see, Rex, is kind of like that Super Bowl, utter disappointment. Now, I'm happy Seattle won. That's all wonderful, and Seattle's having a great old party, and that's great. But I don't like bad games, you know, just shutouts. And that's what I feel like is going on in our country. I see nothing economically. In fact, we do shows on this that shows that anything is changing. If anything, you know, there's another, you know, two more bubbles to pop. And for people who don't understand that, you need to learn it. You need to understand your economy and what they're doing to it. I look across the world economically, and I'm like going, Europe, still in terrible shape. Emerging market countries are finally feeling the, you know, some of the butt end of the rest of the world's bad economics. You know, they continue to print and print and print and borrow and print and borrow, and now the president wants to create some kind of new felonious retirement called MIRA. I was getting a kick out of that. That's in Syria, isn't it? Or Turkey. I'm sorry. Not Syria, but Turkey. But in fact, that's where Santa Claus is from, isn't it?
Yeah, St. Nicholas, who we know as Santa Claus, was the bishop of Myra in Asia Minor. But I don't think Obama's Myra has anything to do with that.
Oh, well, maybe he was hoping that play on words would add value to it.
You.
So here we sat on a Thursday with no real focus like we do on Sundays. So it's kind of an open-ended thing. And I, you know, I can go down any rabbit hole you want to go down. There are days like today, I'm just like overwhelmed. I've read and absorbed the last two or three days so much information I can't see straight, you know, on different things. I don't know when it's all going to fall apart, you know, in terms of, you know, what's happening at the government level or economics or Obamacare. You know, I mean, this guy will change the law and to almost every aspect he has to put this off. And people in the article were actually saying, why 3 years? Well, 3 years, he's gone. And his debacle is somebody else's problem. You know, it's got to be fixed, Rex. We can't make it 3 years like this. Anyway, back to you.
Well, I agree with you. We can't make it. And then, you know, what's the focus? Well, frankly, I think that we got to focus every show we do, no matter what day of the week it is. That focus is oust the friggin' rhinos, because unless you've got conservatives and libertarians, and I'm not talking about Gary Johnsonite libertarians, I'm talking about Ron Paul libertarians, working together in the GOP, then, you know, you're going to have a bunch of fractured independents and parties like the Libertarian Party and the Constitution Party at the local level, but you're going to have duopoly dominance at the national level, which basically means corporatist Keynesians, whether they're called Democrats or Republicans, doesn't matter. That's the real battle. And unfortunately, too many conservative and even libertarian voters and Tea Party and Liberty Movement or what have you people are still buying the BS. They're watching the Fox News. They think that Bill O'Reilly is giving hard interviews. They think that they're getting a conservative perspective. And they think that when people like Mitch McConnell or Johnny Boehner speak conservative, oh, well, they've had a change of heart. They must be good guys now. You have to wake them up. You have to educate them. You have to get them involved now. It's already February. Primaries are and caucuses are happening very, very soon, and November will be here before you know it. And unless you want the Republicans to gain control of the Senate and maintain control of the House while still not being conservative, you'd better get busy. It's Thursday, and we are live, which is unusual, but this is our new schedule. Make a note of it. We are now going to be broadcasting two shows per week, every Thursday and every Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern. 9 p.m. Eastern. That's an hour earlier than usual. Sundays will be just the way they have been. We'll have some kind of theme, and we'll rip through, and Trog and I will try to bring you the conservative perspective on things and tell you what to do. Thursdays will be a little bit more fast and loose because, frankly, we don't have time to do preparation for more than one show a week. The call-in number is 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. And we'll be taking calls on Thursday. So if you've got something on your mind regarding the topic at hand, which is conservatism and the rhinos, call in 646-649-1013. All of our shows are available to you on Blog Talk Radio. Just go to blogtalkradio.com. Search out Liberty's Thunder. And right there, you can scroll down. Every show is there. You can click the link. It'll play right in your browser. And if you go below the scrolling graphics, you can right-click on the download link and get an MP3, which you can listen to in your MP3-enabled device, or send it as an email to somebody, or burn a CD and hand it out at your Tea Party meetings, Liberty Campaign for Liberty meetings, Republican Party meetings, whatever. Get the word out there. Sharing what we talk about here is not necessarily endorsing exactly what we say or even our style, which can sometimes get a little radioactive. But it is giving people a different perspective because a lot of candidates who sound like conservatives and libertarians aren't. We intend to expose them, and we need your help, so keep us posted. On Facebook, like our show page, Liberty's Thunder on Facebook. Make sure you click on the like button and get receive notifications or get notifications so that you will find out when we are broadcasting. And if you want to talk about these topics, go into Liberty's Talk. That is Liberty's Talk on Facebook. That's Chris's group, formerly known as Coalition of Freedom. Lots of really, really powerful information there because the news media is lying to you. This Bill O'Reilly interview that happened before the Super Bowl, by the way, last Sunday we re-aired the Scorching of the Union show so that Chris and I could take off and watch the Super Bowl. Unfortunately, as Chris already mentioned, basically the Seattle Stoners and the Denver Dopeheads didn't really give us much of a game worth watching. No. Nevertheless, Chris and I will be off again this coming Sunday. That's February 9th, but there will be a show being broadcast. It is a pretty good show. It's called Spies Like Us, and it's really focused on the surveillance state and a little bit on the Dan Aykroyd, Chevy Chase classic Spies Like Us, so make sure you check that out and share it with your friends. And remember, you can keep sharing our shows after we broadcast because they are always available to you. Get the word out there. A lot of people who are conservative have never heard anything like this because they're busy with their families, they're busy with their businesses, they're busy at their jobs, they're busy trying to figure out how effed up their medical insurance just got thanks to the Imperial President, Nazi Pelosi, Darth Redius, and the Bendover Republicans. So they might just click on Fox Noise for a couple of minutes a day and get Neocon Hour with Brett Baer and Douchebaggery Hour with Bill O'Reilly. But the important thing is that you've got to get them awake and get them involved right now. Call a number, 646-649-1013. Chris, unless you got something on your mind, I want to talk a little bit about conservatism.
Yeah, go for it.
All right, now, we did one show in our series, I don't know when we'll get to it, hopefully maybe next Thursday we'll start, on defining conservatism. The problem is that it is a word that people just don't know what it means. People equate conservative with Republican. Whenever I'm discussing politics with somebody, and by the way, you'd better be discussing politics with everybody. Oh, but it's not polite. I don't really give a crap if it's polite or not. You better get them involved because politics is no longer a 6 p.m. Nightly, glance and a once a year pulling the string at the lever at the polls. Politics is now 24/7, 365. It's in your toilet. It's in your light bulb. It's in your food. This farm bill they just passed subsidized all sorts of crap that you probably don't want to eat. It is in your bedroom. It is in your car. It is watching you at every corner when you're out in public. It is listening to your phone calls. It is reading your emails. And it is really, really everything. So you better get busy, get people involved, talk to them about politics. But when I do it, people often think, at first, they kind of look at me and they think, if they're liberal-minded, they'll think, oh, he's one of us. He's a liberal. If they're a conservative, they'll think, oh, he's one of us. He's a Republican. And then they'll find out that I'm neither. I'm a conservative, yep. Which does not mean that I am a Republican, because guess what? For most of their history, the Republicans have been the farthest thing from conservative. But there is something called conservatism. Russell Kirk is the one who most closely defined it, so make sure you read about it. Russell Kirk has – there's information online. You can read his books. But it's very important to start finding out what it is. And there are groups that are out there trying to teach people this stuff, real groups, not these Karl Rove-sponsored monstrosities calling themselves Conservative Victory Project and other crap like that that are really just rhino protection devices and conservative kill packs, but real groups like the Leadership Institute. Morton Blackwell, who is on the RNC from Virginia, has been a longtime Republican advocating for authentic grassroots activism so that people's voices can be heard. He has been pushing for a revision of the rules that they illegally instituted in Tampa and have recently just made worse by shortening the primary season so that the big money rhino, which increasingly is not looking like it's Chris Krusty the Clown from New Jersey, but a lot more like possibly Skull and Bushes again, another Jebby Bush. But the Leadership Institute is very good. Hopefully we'll be talking about that. But there is a website that I want you to go to. It is freethinku.com. That's FreeThinku, the letter U, .com, freethinku.com. And there is classes there, online classes, which are free, that talk about libertarianism, conservatism, what is traditional ordered liberty? Why did we fight the Cold War? Why is the Constitution important? That kind of stuff. Very, very good stuff to help people really understand what's going on, because if you are armed with knowledge, you cannot be swayed by propaganda. But if you are not armed with knowledge, if you don't know what you stand for, if you don't know the truth, and all you do is subscribe to some kind of label, whether that label is libertarian, liberal, progressive, Marxist, conservative, Democrat, Republican, it doesn't matter. If all you subscribe to is a label, you don't know shit. This is really, really important, and this is a very good source. That's Freethink University. The links are in Liberty's Talk and also on our Facebook page, Liberty's Thunder on Facebook. And one of the instructors...
chat.
Yeah, and it's also in the chat right now. One of the instructors at Freethink University is an expert lawyer who understands the Constitution very well, and I'm not talking about understanding the Constitution in some theoretical manner because you swept the paper at some college somewhere and now you somehow are the chief community organizer who thinks he's a con law attorney. I'm talking about somebody who's actually argued in one case in front of the Supreme Court and who's up there right now. Supposedly a first-year senator is supposed to keep his mouth shut and learn the ropes, but he's causing some serious waves because he intends to do what the people of Texas elected him to do. The junior senator from Texas, that is Senator Ted Cruz, and here's about 7 minutes, one of the clips, there's a lot of data on there, but one of the clips about Ted Cruz talking about conservatism.
Hi, I'm Ted Cruz, and I'm thrilled to have the opportunity to visit with you about the future of the conservative movement. In short, the future of the conservative movement is you. The future of the conservative movement are the men and women across this country that are rising up to turn this country around. I want to thank you for having made it through the program Conservatism 101. You've heard from some terrific leaders. You've spent a lot of time building your foundation. I want to thank you also if you've been involved with the Leadership Institute, which does a tremendous job preparing activists to stand up and fight to make a difference in this country. I'll tell you, our office in D.C., nearly half the office are alums of Leadership Institute programs. So thank you for your commitment. How do we turn this around? How do we turn the country around? At the end of the day, that's what every one of us wants to see. We want to see America even stronger in the next 50 years than it has been for the last 200. How do we do that? Well, if you look to the last 50 years, I think there were two events that had the greatest impact on liberty in America. Two events that had game-changing impact. Number one was in 1980, the election of Ronald Wilson Reagan as President of the United States. And number two was in 2008, the election of Barack Obama as President of the United States. Both of those events, I would suggest, were orders of magnitude more significant in terms of transforming liberty in this country. The former, restoring liberty, and the latter, unfortunately, undermining liberty. And you know, if you look to those two leaders, if you look to Reagan, if you look to Barack Obama, they actually have some striking similarities, similarities that I think are useful for us to focus on. I'm going to suggest to you that for you to be an effective leader in this country, for the conservative movement, takes three characteristics. Number one, principles. You've got to know what you believe. That's why it's so important that you've spent the time going through conservatism 101. Number two is backbone, something that is incredibly rare in politics. As rare as principles are, backbone is even rarer. And number three is the ability to communicate, the ability to persuade, to inspire. If you look at Ronald Reagan, if you look at Barack Obama, both of them share those three characteristics. Both of them have commitments to principles. Ronald Reagan to principles that advance liberty, and sadly, Barack Obama to principles that undermine liberty. Both of them have incredible backbone, and both of them were blessed with the ability to communicate those principles. Now, what I'd like to do is, using that framework, talk through specifically how you can continue to be a key leader in the conservative movement. Let's talk about principles, and the bulk of the time I want to focus on will concern principles. The principles that matter for a conservative, I think, focus most fundamentally on two areas: free markets and the Constitution. You know, free markets, I began my education as a conservative really in high school. In high school, growing up in Houston, I got involved with a group that was called the Free Enterprise Institute. And what it did is it took high school students and it had a study free market economics. It would have us read Milton Friedman and von Mises and Bastiat and Hayek and prepare speeches on free market economics, prepare speeches on what's called the 10 pillars of economic wisdom, basic principles, things like nothing in our material world comes from nowhere or goes nowhere. Everything has a source, a destination, and a cost that must be paid, which led to the second pillar of economic wisdom, that everything government gives to you, it must first take from you. Those principles, having a firm grounding in free market principles, is invaluable to be a leader in the conservative movement. So I would encourage every one of you to build on the learning, build on the time you've spent now, to go back and read Milton Friedman and Hayek and von Mises, understand the founding principles of why free markets work, how they work. And then number two, the Constitution. You know, if you look at the history of our country, the framers of our Constitution fought two revolutions. First, they fought a bloody revolution with guns and bayonets. And then they fought an even more important revolution, a revolution of ideas. And when our country was founded, there were two revolutionary ideas that were fundamental. Number one, for millennia, people had been told that rights come from kings and queens. Kings and queens are endowed with sovereignty, and any rights we get are given by grace, given by whim of the monarch, to be taken away at equal whim. That had been the understanding for millennia. The framers of America began with the opposite premise. As the Declaration puts it, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed not by a king, not by a queen, not even by a president, but by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That idea that rights come from God Almighty, they don't come from man, they don't come from government, they don't come from rulers, was an extraordinary and revolutionary idea. And hand in hand with that was a second revolution, which is the understanding had always been that sovereignty goes down. Sovereignty goes from the monarch down to the people. And our framers began with the opposite idea, that sovereignty resides in we the people. That's why the Constitution begins, we the people, because it was the people themselves who possessed sovereignty and who lend it for just a short time to rulers and government. But as James Madison explained in the Federalist Papers, if men were angels, no government would be necessary. The great challenge in forming a government is to enable those governing to govern, and yet at the same time, to oblige them to govern themselves. That's what the Constitution does, and it serves, as Jefferson put it, as chains to bind the mischief of government. Let me encourage you in your study, build your foundations, build your understanding on free market economics and on the Constitution, read the Federalist Papers, read the debates on ratification, understand the ideas that form the foundation of this country. But even
conservatism just oozes out of Senator Cruz's pores. He speaks it well. But understand something. This is studying conservatism and knowing what it is not some kind of academic exercise. It is not an ideology or even a party. Conservatism, Russell Kirk said it, is a state of mind, a type of character, a way of looking at the civil social order, and about taking the timeless lessons of history and the traditional institutions and age-old wisdom that we've learned and applying it to contemporary situations without losing your grounding. That's conservatism. Things like Marxism, even libertarianism, progressivism, these are ideologies that are utopian in nature. Conservatism is practical, and that's why it's important. But the problem is that we haven't been talking about conservatism in so long. We've been equating it with republicanism. We've forgotten what it meant, and so we get confused when we hear about it. And that's precisely why it is important to get in touch with organizations like the Leadership Institute and to take these courses online. Because if you're grounded in truth and you know what you stand for, you can withstand the propaganda. On the line with us, we've got Matt Hurt, who has had close associations with Morton Blackwell and also the Leadership Institute. Matt, you are live on Liberty's Thunder with Rex and Trog. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Let me tell you, the Conservatism 101 training and the lectures that have come down from Senator Cruz and Mark Levin and the others, Morton and others, are fundamentally the most important lectures you can listen to. And what's great about it at FreethinkU and at the leadershipinstitute.org is that those things are free. You can watch those videos, and you can couple them with important videos like, if you just search on YouTube for Milton Friedman and F.A. Hayek and these types of guys who understood the importance of the individual and of the free market, that's how we win. And what's great about it is they're so easy to digest. That Freethink video with Senator Cruz and the other ones, they are so easy to understand if you just have 15 to 20 minutes to take out of your busy schedule and listen to them. It's such an uplifting thing to be able to package that into something as fantastic as what you guys played for the first 7 minutes there, and what is also available online, through YouTube or wherever.
Excellent. And we're so glad that they did it. How long have these been available? Because I only recently stumbled across them, Matt.
These Conservatism 101 has been a project of the Leadership Institute and of some other organizations for about the last year now. And they have 10 or 12 different trainings by, 10 or 12 different high-profile guys, Morton, Ted Cruz, Mark Levin, Stephen Moore, who is now the chief economist over at the Heritage Foundation, guys who can really communicate these issues, you guys were talking about, immediately before I came on, the philosophy and the importance of being able to put that into practical application, taking the training and understanding that, and just in the last 4 days at the Leadership Institute, they've had the Campaign Manager School, which teaches young people and old people alike how to run campaigns for principled conservative candidates. And what's great about it is in last year, 2013, the Leadership Institute trained over 25,000 people. The year before that, in 2012, they trained just 12,000 people. And so the training has become so available and so widespread, either online or here in Arlington or nationwide, that it's really spreading at almost an exponential rate. We are training folks almost faster than we can locate them.
Hey, Matt, this is Trog, Chris, whatever you want to call me, Fred, Elroy, it all works. I remember you were on, I think you were on this show a while back, and
sure,
we kind of chit-chatted a little bit. How old are you?
I am, right now, I just turned 27 yesterday.
Okay, so you're in my son's generation. And why did you get involved in this? What drew you to it?
You know, what's crazy is I ran for office 8 years ago at age 19. My parents had never been politically active. I saw there was something wrong with my county government back home in outside Nashville. And I said, I want to change that. And crazy is one of the first guys I met when I was running for county commission now 8 years ago, he handed me a copy of The Law by Frederick Bastiat.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I cannot vote for you until you read and understand this book. And
right.
I read it. I devoured it in less than a day. And I said, this is, you know, because I was 19. I didn't understand my philosophy. I didn't know what I believed. And I read that, and I said, this is exactly what I believe and what I know to be true is that government and laws are instituted and enacted to prevent other people from taking from me. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
I have my property. I have my family, I have my friends, I have what is mine, and the government that we have is supposed to protect us from someone else taking that from us. And it was so life-changing to read that and to know, because, you know, I grew up in a Southern Baptist household. I went to church
mm-hmm.
every Sunday, and I was more on social issues, I was more liberal, and I opposed war. And so people at my church said, well, you're a liberal, you need to listen to Sean Hannity. And I discovered, you know, in the middle of that.
Why, because he's a liberal too?
Yeah, right. So I discovered in the middle of that, in the middle of the whole, you should listen to Sean Hannity, I discovered Frederick Bastiat. And I said, no, I'm not liberal, I'm not conservative, I'm libertarian. And there's a philosophy here that protects people from plunder, it protects people from government, it protects people from the harm of other individuals. And that's what I really want to advance. And so I went through college. You know, I was a freshman in college when I ran for office. I graduated from college in 2009 and went to work full-time for the Leadership Institute to train folks. And I worked there for 10 months, and now I lecture for them part-time. But, you know, one of my passions is ensuring that people who I encounter my day-to-day life, talking to people, have an ability to, one, understand the philosophy. So I hook them up with the books they need to read, you know, Economics in One Lesson, The Law, The Road
mm-hmm.
to Serfdom, Capitalism and Freedom. Milton Friedman is, it, you know, if it's too much to read, if it's too dense for you, and it, sometimes it is. My parents they're apolitical, and they don't get into the weeds. And I tell them, I say, YouTube Milton Friedman, his videos are so easy to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
yeah,
so that's what I tell people. And I share those videos. I share Free to Choose, and I share the dozens of videos that thankfully somebody has uploaded, you know, to YouTube that give us the wisdom of Milton Friedman and his wife Rose. And it's
right.
such a great, you know, we're right now we're at a precipice. We have incredible technology at our fingertips. We have iPhones, and we have the internet, and we have all these magnificent things. But we also have short attention spans, and
yep.
so I'm trying to package these ideas. And luckily, if you search Milton Friedman, if you search Frederick Bastiat, if you search Broken Window Fallacy, if you search, you know, the Road to Serfdom and other things, even something as simple as the Hayek versus Keynes rap, it packages
mm-hmm, brilliant.
The
boom bust cycle.
The boom and bust cycle. It's brilliant, and it packages it in a way that folks who don't have a long attention span, they can't sit down and digest Hayek, because it's difficult. I've read I've read The Road to Serfdom. I've read Economics in One Lesson. They're drives. It's not entertaining. It's something that could potentially lose your interest very quickly. And so to be able to package it is very important.
I was younger than you when I read The Road to Serfdom. I found it gripping, but I guess for most people, especially in this Twitter speed era that we are in, they're kind of heavy. Actually, I think Economics in One Lesson is a little more accessible, but I think things like what FreethinkU is doing, a lot of good stuff at Mises, lots of videos, lots of short, brief articles treat this stuff very easily. It's very important, and it's important to understand this stuff, and not just as an intellectual exercise. And I think you can see the difference when we watch the news and you hear some nut job like Jihad Jane McHammed speak or Lindsay Lightness Loafer's Gramnesty versus someone like Rand Paul or Ted Cruz. Because when Rand Paul and Ted Cruz speak, they don't read from notes. Like Newt Gingrich, he doesn't read from notes. They just speak it because they understand it, they believe it, and they own it. These other guys are doing talking points. And the problem with most of us voters is we end up repeating these stupid, inane talking points because we don't have a core intellectual basis for what we believe as conservatives, and I think that's what this is doing.
Totally agree. And if you can dip in, you know, to give credence to the more the heavier reading, if you can dip your toe into some of the stuff on YouTube, and then you can turn and spend an hour or 30 minutes a day reading Mises and reading Hayek and others, I do appreciate and I do like and I understand the YouTube videos because we're in the, you know, gimme sort of culture where we need it now and we need it in 140 characters or less, so I need to be able to retweet that idea. But if you can sit down and watch a 5-minute video and understand what you've seen, then you can definitely read Mises and Hayek and Milton Friedman. And it's fascinating what is opened up to you. And then you understand the philosophy. I always knew, you know, growing up in high school and in college before I read the law, I always knew that I supported limited government, but I didn't know why. And then I started reading them, and I said, this is exactly why. It's because that we have rights that have been given to us from our Creator. And, you know, I come from a Judeo-Christian background, but I think that, you know, if that isn't your thing, if you don't believe in a Judeo-Christian God, that you can at least believe in a higher power that has given to us these rights, and we have to protect and defend them, not only from from our neighbors, but also from governments that are instituted, quite literally among men. And what we're seeing now with Barack Obama and George W. Bush and John Boehner and the expansive government in Washington, it's really fascinating. I think we're at a point right now where more and more Americans are saying, maybe they don't say libertarian, maybe they don't say conservative, but they understand something is wrong with our government. And people
Both
are getting
sides.
Fed up with it.
Well,
yeah, people are definitely fed up.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I said both sides. And that's important to understand. I think that, you know, I was watching, went through the primary daily. I was involved, very involved in the primary. And since the primary, we've been nonstop. And way back when Rex and the rest of us kind of coalesced together, I built this stupid group, Coalition of Freedom, and the reason I built it was I wanted a place to, when you go out into the world, there's so much data and information, and there's this thing I call American Political Idol. You know, they're playing keyword phrases, and everybody's playing this and playing that and telling you what to get mad about, what to get excited about, you know, who to vote for, who the upcoming, you know, presidential candidate's going to be and who the current poll, and just bull crap. It's all MTV generation propaganda. I watched this, you know, I lived through that generation, and I watched it define the way people looked at life and success. And it changed our culture. And I remember one time I was watching or listening to Beck on the radio one day, and he was talking about a transition in his thinking, because we always use this word freedom. And I think this word freedom and rights is overused and misunderstood, because our founding fathers knew we would never be a free country if you didn't have individual responsibility. And that's what's been washed out of our country. We have people who are dependent. We have people who want to do what the hell they want to do without any regards to how it impacts people around them, their children, you know, marriage and divorce and all these things. You know, we're not supposed to talk about social issues, but our society has fallen apart, but we're not supposed to talk about it. So we are at a crossroads of, you know, I grew up in a different generation. So we are at a crossroads where people are starting to go, crap, this doesn't work. I may, like what you said in your first part of your dialogue, I may not understand it, but my gut tells me something's wrong. And now I need to go find out what I believe in. That's what I, and I believe that we have two generations alive right now that got to figure this out. My generation didn't, because we were taught these things, you know, in our youth. So when I became an adult, I knew what I believed and what I stood for and what was right and wrong and why things worked and why society worked and didn't work and what tore it apart. But I think that we've been masked with so much, entertainment and TV and reality TV and American Idol and football. 111.5 million freaking people watch a football game, but 115 million people who are eligible to vote didn't even get off their lazy butts and go down and pull a lever.
Well,
and when
hey,
you
let me
see
get...
that, you know what I'm saying? We are at a crossroads, and I'm it's motivational. It's good to hear you come on and be so fired up.
Well, what I'm encouraged about is, you know, I ran for office at age 19. My parents, who were born in the 50s, had never voted ever in their entire lives, and they registered to vote for me because it was I'm their son, and that was 2006. But every election since, my mom and dad had both said, you know, we know something is wrong, and over the dinner table at Thanksgiving 2011, my dad said, the only guy I can vote for is Ron Paul. And my mom echoed that sentiment. And you know, we pulled back, and in 2012, they didn't vote on Election Day. And I asked my mom, I was like, why didn't you vote? And she said, well, you know, our candidate wasn't on the ballot. And we can't vote for somebody who wants to grow government, and you know, be it Mitt Romney or Barack Obama or whoever it happens to be. People are understanding that. And it's people who have never been engaged before, they realize something is wrong. And, and I think I'm so encouraged by when I teach it at the Leadership Institute, or I'm talking to friends, or I pass out copies of the law, people say, there's something wrong, and we can stop it. And, you know, maybe, you know, some people say it takes a few eggs. You got to break a few eggs to make an omelet. And we may go further down the road to serfdom. Before we pull back.
Don't quote socialists on my radio waves. it's great that you're doing that, Matt, and I think you're absolutely right. People have they smell something in the air, they feel something is wrong, and the fact is we've let it happen far too long, and now often even when we start sensing it, we get paralyzed, which is why it's important to get information out there. Frankly, it is the only reason we do this radio show.
I was going to piggyback off that. I want to say that one of the greatest things now is the advancement of social media, where, you know, if you've got a microphone and an internet connection, you can start a radio show and you can reach out to your friends. And you know, 20 years ago, people got their information from the four major networks, and cable news was sort of a burgeoning, it was a new thing. And 40 years ago, people only got their news from Walter Cronkite. And now you can get your news from anywhere. You can get your news, you know, my mom has a Facebook account, and she posts stuff that is important to her, and people are taking her, the stuff that she posts, and they're saying, this is what's important to me. You know, my Facebook friends, my Twitter friends, and listeners of this show and listeners of other blog talk radio or internet radio, or even, you know, people like Rush Limbaugh and Mark Levin and others, they're saying, this is where we get our news. You know, we're not listening to Walter Cronkite, because what he packaged wasn't worth buying. And now people realize that, you know, you can get your news from anywhere. And it's so important to be able to sift through the bullcrap and say, this is what is true and this is what is right. And I'm going to march forward and fight for those values And that's what's great about your guys' radio show and the other, you know, there are so many in the last two or three years, internet radio programs and websites that have just, you know, cut through the bull crap and have allowed people to see what is real, what is true, and what is it's really freeing to people who have never had that access, and we've totally changed the landscape in the last 5 or 10 years.
It is. We, one of the dangers of that, though, is that there's too much information, which is why Chris does what he does with the group. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, that was what I was going to, you know, a little history on us when we first met on the shows. I remember saying way back when, we need to create an educational environment. It's one thing to be able to talk. It's one thing to be able to entertain. And it's another thing to be able to educate, because that's where what I found the gap was. You know, I watched the Ron Paul movement, and I watched a very powerful movement across the country, totally at the grassroots level, totally in the social media environment. And but the thing is that it got scattered, you know, towards the end. And yeah, the Republican Party and the RNC, you know, did everything in their power to destroy that movement. But the thing is that you can only be destroyed if you allow it to be destroyed. And it's the same thing with the Tea Party movement in 2010. It was a tremendous movement, grassroots movement. But they I don't know if it was because they thought, oh, we're Republicans, and that's what left them vulnerable to being infiltrated and then minimized for the 2012 election. I think they've learned their lesson. And a lot of people are like really buckling down and realizing that the Republican Party is full of just as many progressive enemies as the Democratic Party is. And I think that people have been bloodied, so to speak. And sometimes you got to get bloodied. You got to get knocked down to find out what kind of fighter you are. And that's where we're at. And what our goal has been is, you know, we do topics, so to speak, on the show, because there's a lot going on in our country, but we always try to pull those topics back to that education. What is conservatism? How do we win? How do we, you know, reach out to other people? And that's really the underlying theme to everything we do. And the same with my Facebook group. There might be 36 different topics going on, but I try to keep it focused on things so that people can learn and bring in good resources, whether it is a YouTube clip or Mises or, you know, what we write, you know, out of our own hearts, you know, as far as that goes. But the goal is always, you know, is to build, because this country is crumbling and people are confused and they're in, you know, the deer in the headlight shock. And there's a little bit of a defeatist mentality there. But I always think back to our founding fathers. You know, these guys decided to go to war, you know what I mean, on their own territory, in their own land, where their own home.
For a 3% tax.
And yeah, you know, well, for a great idea, and that was freedom, you know, and self-government, and that was so powerful. And yet people are so, I don't know, they're distracted easily, and that's why education is important, because you've got to embed information in them. The good and the bad with social media and Twitter is the speed. You know, Rex and I are always, you know, criticizing this posting the news of the day crap. Drives me nuts, because running around posting the news of the day is being a free newspaper delivery man for the major news networks. You're not accomplishing anything. You have got to pick the topic and mold down into that topic and support it, and then rip the guts out of it and show the truth of what's going on, and then show the solution from a constitutional conservative manner.
And that's the key right there,
Chris. Really, yeah.
That's the key, because the fact is that information, all that information, even the good stuff at FreeThinkU, it's useless unless you make it a part of you and then you take action on it. And action cannot be in Tuesday in November. It has to be long before then. Tuesday in November is too late. Most people get bombarded with this information, either tune it out or just retweet it or share it and you know, run around.
Game over,
not knowing
man.
What's going
Game
on,
over.
You know? And that is not the right attitude. The attitude is to take the information, distill it, and then figure out what is an action. And I think that's what the Leadership Institute sets itself aside from just mere intellectual, philosophical, debate. It's important to have those philosophies and the outlook, but action is what is required. And doesn't the Leadership Institute do a lot of action training, Matt?
Oh, certainly. In my engagement and involvement with them, it's all about action. They have and they provide texts that will allow you to understand why you believe your philosophy. And they pass out capitalism and freedom. They pass out the law. But that what's important is being able to organize block by block, neighborhood by neighborhood, to find these folks who agree with you and to put them on the front lines and to make sure, not political action isn't voting, on election day necessarily, but it's organizing your neighbors. It's organizing your friends. It's bringing people out and getting things done. And, before I go, I do have to go pretty quickly. What's fascinating is, like I said, this enlightenment, basically, that has come about in the 2008 election with Ron Paul and the Tea Party movement. And being a delegate down to the convention in Tampa, despite what the party has done, we're not discouraged. And I knew in getting involved that they were going to take a swing at me. They were going to punch me, and I was going to, I was going to recoil and be upset about it. But I was going to, charge again and stay firm on my beliefs and what I understand to be right. And what I want to do is encourage your listeners to, no matter what happens, no matter how many times they punch us and keep us down, there is a growing movement, and it's fascinating. I'm 27. I'm in a region of the country where there are 20-somethings who work on the Hill. They work in nonprofits. They work for the Leadership Institute. They work for whomever, and they are not deterred by the machine that is fighting back, and because we always knew they were going to fight back, and the resolve of young people and the understanding that we have in these founding principles and the understanding that we have in the building blocks to move the votes and move the system in our favor is fascinating, and I'm encouraged daily by it. And as Morton says, it's a long ball game. We're gonna get hit. We're gonna get attacked. We're gonna get demoralized. We're gonna get beat down. But even the losses that we suffer in the short term, I'm looking toward the long term, and I think we're in a great position. And it's because of guys like you. It's because of outlets like Facebook and Twitter and Blog Talk Radio and other types of venues that we're able to spread our message, and people are latching onto it, and we're bringing folks in, dozens by the day, and thousands by the week who have said, we got to do something about this.
Yeah,
that's great.
We're going to promote this more. But go ahead, Rex, and then I want to ask him.
I was just going to say, Matt, you got anything you want to plug? Any action people should be looking to take? Any meetings that they should be going to before you take off?
What I would encourage people to do is to go to leadershipinstitute.org and check out the training. We can bring the training to you. If you can't come to Arlington, Virginia, we can bring training to your community. I've been all over the country training folks, and, be it 2, 3, a dozen, 20, 25, 50 people, I will go all over the country to make sure folks know how to move the needle in our direction. We have a really great – I do want to give a shout-out to a guy named Chris Doss. He teaches in the grassroots department at the Leadership Institute. And not only does he have a firm grasp of what we have to do electorally, but he totally understands what we have to do philosophically to educate folks. Because it isn't about just winning elections. It's about educating our neighbors and our parents and our relatives. Mm-hmm. And he totally gets it. He is singularly probably the best person to take a training from the Leadership Institute. So if you want to do that, if you want to bring that to your community, you go to leadershipinstitute.org/training and then find a grassroots training, or you can email cdoss@limail.us, and that's limail.us. And he like I said, he gets both ends. He understands the philosophical, and he understands the political, and it's fascinating to watch him connect with activists all over the country. And
awesome.
We can win this. And I'm encouraged. And like I said, what you guys do is fantastic. And what your listeners do is fantastic. And every blog post, every Facebook status update, every tweet is an opportunity to engage someone who has not heard this message or who doesn't understand it. And I'm ready. I'm ready to fight. Let's win this.
Awesome. Force multiplier. That's what we need. Remember, our new schedule, Matt, is we're doing Thursdays and Sundays, 9 p.m. Eastern. Stop by any time on Thursday. We're going to be taking calls. And if Chris wants to – was that his name, Chris Doss? Is that what he said?
Chris Doss is his name, and he's fantastic.
If he wants to stop by, just give him the number, give him the link, Thursdays, and let's get the information out there because I want a conservative army to descend on Washington, D.C. this November.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate being on. I love what you guys are doing, and I look forward to working with you in the future.
Great.
Right.
Thanks,
on,
Matt.
Buddy.
See you, man.
All right, folks, that was Matt Hurt with the Leadership Institute. Check out the website. Get involved. Take action. This is all just hot air and talk if we don't put it into action. We need a force multiplier. Thoughts on that, Chris?
Yeah, I'm popping around through the site doing my typical, search, buzzing the surface of it. Before I go deep, I'm definitely going to watch some of the videos and get this wrapped around my head. You know, one of the things I think about, and you and I talk about this all the time, and that is how do we grow? If there's any one, probably, if I can say this without sounding negative, one of the most frustrating things is getting people to focus and grow, add numbers, and for us, obviously, our little world is our group and our radio show, because our goal is we try to be entertaining, and we are a couple nutcakes, but, the goal is to be in an environment where we're reaching thousands of people and helping people get clarity on what they believe. Because that's the key. If you don't know what you believe, then you're just another drone for the media and the political parties to tell you how to spend your money and how to vote. And there's so much more depth behind everything. You pick a topic. I don't care what it is. You pick a topic. BRICS, the Olympics coming up, and the politics behind that, and the bull crap. And I was watching videos today. Some great interviews with some very sharp people from around the world, always trying to educate myself as what in the hell is going on, whether it be a topic I'm interested in, which like Russia, I'm very interested in because I see this emerging power, coming out of the Cold War and rebuilding itself and its impact on the world. So that's an interesting study to me. But it all ties back to our lives in America and what our politicians are and are not doing. They're doing a whole bunch of crap they're not supposed to be doing. They're influenced by a whole bunch of people they shouldn't be influenced by. And what they are doing is they're making bad decisions, and then they're making you and I pay for it while they're asking us to give up our freedoms. There is something extremely broken in this country right now. And it is the greatest country ever in the history of the world. And it can turn around. It has to turn around. It's not a question of in the 80s or the 90s, the things we dealt with. This is a whole new set of dynamics. And we need to turn this ship. And to turn this ship, we need more people, more eyeballs, and more earballs. More eyeballs on the group and more earballs on the show so that we can do what we've been attempting to do for the last, what is this, a year we've been doing this? Or some kind of crazy number like that?
I wish it was only a year.
Oh, is it more than a year now?
I think it was May 2012. Here we are, February 2014. It's almost 2 years.
Oh man, that's just shocking.
Yeah, speaking
well,
of
I
shocking.
Didn't come on board. I didn't come on board for a while, but
you were on board. You were on board in August.
God.
That's at least
18
months.
Yeah, around the Yeah, but I mean, I was very involved. I just didn't know you guys, you know,
right.
and you know, get involved in the radio shows and things like that. But I think that I am extremely encouraged that there are people who are focused. The challenge is that they're all over the map trying to do their own thing. We need more people who have the ability to influence groups of people to come together and work together. When I see something like the Leadership Institute or the Mises or whatever the case may be, you know, or even if you want to talk about Rand or Cruz or, you know, any of these guys, what they have is they have a coalition factor. They're able to pull people to them and add and then educate. If you think about whether it be Rand or Amash or any of them or Cruz, and you listen to them speak, they're not speaking just to make you excited and to make you go, yeah, Ted Cruz. Yeah, he's working his butt off to rebuild the conservative movement and to reinvigorate, you know, conservatism or the Tea Party or whatever the case may be. But they're not just doing this because they appreciate applause. I've done, you know, thousands of events in my lifetime, you know, where you're in front of a crowd or a large crowd, or even I've even spoken in coliseums. And, yeah, it's really cool to get an applause, but when you do this crap day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, pretty soon that kind of goes away. And what holds you steady through that process is I know why I'm here, and I'm actually trying to accomplish something. But if the message is given and it's not received and then people don't act on it, then it's really a waste of time. And that's what the wrestling point for anybody who's involved in a movement or an organization or a business or a nonprofit is the result. And I know that I want results. I mean, when I got involved in this stuff, it wasn't because I didn't have anything better to do with my life. Trust me. But I got involved because I thought, you know, I have this ability to sift through data and simplify it and find out the bull crap and separate it out and get the truth. And then so I've always known that about myself. So I thought, okay, I'll bring that to the table. You know what I mean? I want to help educate people. I want to help people understand what the truth is so that people can lock onto that and then now act. And that's the most difficult one in this country today because people are so buzzed out on, you know, the video or the event or the Super Bowl or this or that, and then it's over and then the wave is over. And it's not over. It takes work. It takes discipline. It takes continually educating yourself. It takes reaching out to other people, pulling them in. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm rambling.
I was going to say, and that's why we've expanded the Coliseum of Liberty's Thunder to Thursdays at 9 p.m. and Sundays
at 9
p.m. Eastern. It just sort of organically developed because this is the Coliseum. Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained? Because we want to get more information out to you. And frankly, Sundays we just jam so much in there, we don't have time for calls. So that's why we're doing it on Thursdays. Believe it or not, we've already killed an hour. Call in number is 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. You can either listen on your phone if you want to. Yeah, if you want to get on, press 1. We'll bring you on. We're going to try to wrap this up within the next hour, and we've got a great clip to end the show. It's got a little bit of Newt from his recent breakout speech at the Reagan Library and a little bit of the Iron Lady Margaret Thatcher and President Ronald Reagan on his 83rd birthday 20 years ago today. So we're going to try to get to that. Real quick, since it's the top of the hour, we're going to go ahead and do a 13-minute clip that has some really good information about the current state of what's going on. And the real key thing here to understand, when we talk about the president on this show, we're not trying to unelect him because guess what? He's out of a job January 2017. That's going to happen. What we're trying to do is box him in by the Constitution from now until he leaves office and then replace him with a real conservative. The only way you do that is to find those that are actually not just speaking rhetorically against Barack Obama to win races, but those that are actually doing something about it, like Trey Gowdy, like Rand Paul, like Ted Cruz, like Mike Lee, like Daryl Issa. So right now the one that's getting the most lightning, he's like a lightning rod, is the junior senator from Texas. And we've also got Judge Napolitano, who really talks about the legality of what's going on. Because there's two ways of looking at this country. Either we are a republic where everybody from the top down is under the same law, and the supreme law is the Constitution of these United States, or it is all about power, and whoever wields the power controls everybody else. So those are your two options. Now, it's sometimes nuanced in between those two things that there's a transition, but that's basically the only two options there are. So here's 13 minutes. We'll see you on the other side, and then we'll wrap up and listen to Newt, Reagan, and Thatcher.
A huge cloud of shit. Wow. God, I think I smell it. Come on, let's go.
And so we have a dream that is attainable, Mr. Conyers, and as well, we will be answering the call of all of America, because people need work, and we're not doing right by them by creating work. And I believe this caucus will put us on the right path, and we'll give President Obama a number of executive orders that he can sign with pride and strength. In fact, I think that should be our number one agenda. Let's write up these executive orders, draft them, of course, and ask the president to stand with us on full employment. Thank you all for organizing this caucus.
Are you a pothead, Falker?
No. No. What? No, 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 no. Jack, no, I'm not. I pass on grass all the time. I mean, not all the time.
Yes or no, grass?
No. Yes. No.
What some people are saying is that the IRS was used at a local level in Cincinnati, maybe other places, to
absolutely
go after.
Absolutely wrong.
But absolutely. How do you know that? Because we still don't know what happened there.
Bill, we do. That's not what happened. Folks have, again, had multiple hearings on this. I mean, these kinds of things keep on surfacing, in part because you and your TV station will promote them.
But when don't folks you feel there are unanswered questions?
Bill, when you actually look at the stuff, there have been multiple hearings on it. What happened here was is that you've got a 501c4 law that people think is confusing. No, that the folks did not know how to implement,
okay,
because it basically says.
So you're saying
if
there was
involved,
no corruption there at all? No,
that's not what I'm saying. That's actually
no. But I want to know what you're saying. You're the leader
absolutely
of the country. You're saying no corruption.
No,
none.
No, there were some boneheaded decisions.
Boneheaded
out of a
but
local
no
office.
Mass corruption.
Not even mass corruption.
Cruz,
not even
he's fired back on President Obama the use of executive orders, writing in a Wall Street Journal. Quote, of all the troubling aspects of the Obama presidency, none is more dangerous than the president's persistent pattern of lawlessness, his willingness to disregard the written law and instead enforce his own policies via executive fiat. Something tells me that Judge Andrew Napolitano would agree. Just so happens the judge wrote a piece himself in the Washington Times and on FoxNews.com, and it's titled The Sorry State of the Union. And we've got the judge with us now. Your take and Ted Cruz's take seem to be similar, but wow, did Cruz come on strong?
He came on strong yesterday, and the Attorney General came on weak, because the questions that Senator Cruz put to the Attorney General basically are, hey, you know what, Mr. Attorney General, it's pretty basic. In our system, the Congress writes the laws, the courts interpret the laws, the president enforces the laws. They don't do each other's jobs. Now, I'll give you an example. The president of the United States of America, last December, when Obamacare was failing and the rollout was a disaster and people were losing their health insurance coverage, basically said to insurers, you know what, keep the old policies in play for another year. That's asking them to break the law, because those old policies, as bad as this law is, are unlawful as of January 1st. Yet when Ted Cruz offered legislation that would have delayed the onset of the new policies and allowed the old ones to stay on legally for a year, the president said he'd veto it. This is reprehensible that he claims for himself, Charles, the power to change the law, but would veto an effort to make the change lawful.
Right, but here's the thing. A persistent pattern of lawlessness, what role does Congress play in this? I mean, are they enabling the president? Outside of Ted Cruz, it's like you can hear crickets. Where's the dissent? Where's the outrage? Where is it?
Congress is becoming like a potted plant. Senator Mike Lee, shortly before the interrogation of Eric Holder that you just read, had a similar Q&A with him. Senator Rand Paul is in the same camp. Senator Marco Rubio, Ron Johnson, they're there as well. Besides them, the Republicans and the Democrats in the Senate are pretty much willing to roll over. They do not want to bring this president in check. Look, everybody's upset that the new commissioner of the IRS is an Obama-supporting, Obama-contributing Democrat. Well, why did the Senate permit this to happen? The IRS used to be and is supposed to be independent. Congress enables the president to do these things, whether it's George Bush or Barack Obama. And then when he does these things, it's Congress's fault for giving him the type of discretion that they give to modern-day presidents. The result of this is a president with the skillful use of executive orders, and this is what Ted Cruz was getting at and I was attempting to get at in the pieces we wrote yesterday, a president can materially alter federal law by the manner in which he enforces it. He did that with immigration. He's probably going to do it with financial regulations. He's certainly doing it with Obamacare.
Where does this conclude? What is the natural conclusion of this? I mean, it always feels like every time we have these discussions, we say ultimately it goes to the Supreme Court. But that's timely, and a lot of damage can be done between now and then.
You know, it depends how deep he goes. He could get into I-word territory, which is impeachment. I don't think that will happen. The Clinton experience was so horrific and arguably took Bill Clinton's eyes off the ball and allowed Osama bin Laden to plan and plot 9/11, so I don't see it happening. But at some point, Congress must do something. If he says to illegal immigrants, I'm not going to deport you if you do A, B, C, and D, and he makes up the A, B, C, and D, it's not from the statute, and it hasn't been enacted by Congress, he is effectively changing the law. That violates his oath. That's not doing what we hired him to do.
Might
presidents do it? Yes, but he's doing it to extremes.
Right. Well, it might violate his oath, but he stood there proud and strong and arrogant in the State of the Union address and said, boys and girls, it's coming. I'm doing this my way. I am indeed the imperial president.
We will be having a lot more of these conversations, Charles, because I think he's going to do it more and more. Because after his State of the Union speech the other night, at least a half dozen Democrats in the Senate who are up for re-election all told Fox and other cable networks, I didn't want to hear that.
Yeah.
I don't want him in my state. He's not going to raise funds for or campaign for
me. Ticking.
The shutdown showdown is on, and there is the clock.
We do have 8 days to reach a resolution on this.
What is the end game?
Here's the question everyone on both sides is asking in Washington.
There's no strategy. There's no end game.
Which is, what's your end game?
Ted Cruz.
Ted Cruz.
Ted Cruz.
Why are Republicans so angry at Ted Cruz?
Republicans are arguing with each other about whether this is the right thing.
What's your end game? Because the government is going to shut down a week from Monday.
We don't want to shut down the government.
The first order of business is going to be to ask Harry Reid if he will agree to allow amendments to be subject to a 60-vote threshold.
I call them legislative arsonists.
You also don't have support in the Senate to defund Obamacare, do you?
Well look, here's the issue.
Well, I'm confused.
And I asked a direct question.
Now it's
do you have
to
support
to
in the Senate to defund Obamacare, or don't you?
Well, we don't know right now.
The guys who are pushing this plan just do not have a rational endgame here.
I would suspect today, with all due respect to my junior senator from Texas,
I don't think in America we should throw tantrums.
This is the first time that the endgame was described to any Republican senator.
This has been one of the strangest weeks I've ever had in Washington, because as soon as we listed Ted Cruz as our featured guest this week, you have ticked off a whole bunch of your fellow Republicans. I got unsolicited research and questions, not from Democrats, but from top Republicans who feel that you have gotten them into this fight without an end game, without a strategy.
There are lots of folks in Washington that can choose to throw rocks. And I'm not going to reciprocate.
On the Obama administration's attempts to expand federal power. He calls it an assault on Texas. Senator Cruz joins us. Nice to see you, sir.
Greta, it's always great to join you.
All right, here's your report just released. What is the purpose of this report?
Well, Brett, I serve as the senior Republican on the Constitution Subcommittee, the Senate Judiciary Committee. And in that capacity, we've put out a series of reports examining the abuse of power and the lawlessness from the Obama administration. And this is the third in that series. This one focuses on the Obama administration's assault on Texas, and it goes through 10 cases where the Obama administration has advocated for overbroad views of federal power and has been over and over again repudiated by the federal courts. The courts have been throwing
out. Have you
won
all 10? Because I know you have 5 pending beyond this, but the 10 that you have listed in this report, we're at the state of the litigation, you've won all 10?
They have either, Texas has either won or the cases have been dropped and they've been mooted.
Okay. You write a report and you can raise holy hell complaining about a president exceeding his power, but what are you going to do? I mean, because it's like you could probably write a report till you're blue in the face.
Well, look, I mean, the biggest thing we can do is shine attention on this, because right now that there is an arrogance in the abuse of power for the administration. You take, for example, just a week ago, Eric Holder, the Attorney General, was before the Senate Judiciary Committee, and I questioned him about the IRS scandal. 8 months ago, the president claimed he was angry and outraged about the IRS scandal. In the 8 months that have followed, no one's been indicted. Lois Lerner, the head of the organization that wrongfully targeted conservatives and Tea Party activists, has pleaded the fifth, has gone before Congress and said...
And retired. Right.
And shockingly, we've discovered now that the Justice Department has appointed a partisan Democrat, a major Obama donor who's given over $6,000 to President Obama and the Democrats, to head the investigation. And so I asked Eric Holder, would you trust John Mitchell to investigate the Nixon administration? Attorneys general in both parties have a long history of demonstrating independence, demonstrating integrity. So Elliot Richardson stood up to President Nixon and appointed Archibald Cox as an independent counsel when there were serious allegations of abuse of power. Likewise, Janet Reno, a Democrat, stood up to Bill Clinton, appointed Robert Fisk. And I ask Eric Holder, why won't you show that same independence, that same integrity to appoint a special prosecutor to get to the truth? He said he sees no problem with a partisan Democrat doing this investigation.
You know what? You're a lawyer. In fact, you clerked in the Supreme Court, so you're a real student of the Constitution, more so than I am. But here's what I don't get. There are thousands of lawyers in the Justice Department, and you can't ask political affiliation when you appoint. So I got that. And so I actually am sympathetic to him making his choice. The problem is I do not understand why this woman lawyer, why this Justice Department accepted the responsibility, simply because I think the code of professional responsibility would, I'm not saying she's biased, but that she at least, we know that people might think she is, and that would poison or jeopardize people's view of the integrity of it. I don't think she should have accepted it.
Well, let me press back slightly on you can't ask political affiliation. The Department of Justice's ethics guidelines say that if the impartiality of a department lawyer can reasonably be questioned, then they must recuse themselves or get a special ethics opinion.
But it's incumbent upon that lawyer volunteering. They can't go around to the Justice Department and say, how much did you give? How much did you give? How much did you give?
These are all public records, so you don't have to ask it.
Do you expect them to go hunting through all the records for every prosecutor?
It takes 10 seconds in a Google search. And this is a prosecutor in the Civil Rights Division, which is historically the most politically charged partisan. I guarantee you, this lawyer is well known to be a partisan Democrat.
Right. You and I both agree that this is not the best choice, but we come at it from a little different direction. I don't think she should have accepted it.
And look, I agree she shouldn't have accepted it, but at the same time, this is not a run-of-the-mill case. This is a case where the allegation is that the IRS was used to target the president's political opponents. It's an abuse of power. And just this weekend, President Obama went on with your colleague Bill Riley and grinned in the camera and said, there's not a smidgen of corruption. And I guess he knows this because his Obama donor made sure that the investigation did not uncover the truth.
Which is another thing, is that we're coming up on the 2-year mark, and I'm going to take the last word on this, that this is the slowest investigation ever. And I don't understand how these things move way too slowly.
They haven't even interviewed the victims. It's not accidental. And to be honest, when the president goes on Fox News and says there's not a smidgen of corruption, it's like he's laughing at the impartial administration of justice. We need to uphold the integrity of the law here.
Senator, always nice to see you, sir.
It's great to be with you.
At my signal, unleash hell.
The integrity of the law. That's what Senator Cruz was talking about. It's a very important point, one that the media and the Democrats are trying to downplay, because that is really the crux of the matter. Are we a nation of laws, or are we a nation of the power of men to be used arbitrarily? It's your choice. It's up to you. It's either going to fall apart because you sit back and do nothing, or we're going to restore the republic because you got active. That was a long clip. There's a lot in there, and you should go back and listen to it again. I want to thank all of you for sharing the show and getting it out there and tweeting it and sharing it on Facebook, getting it all over the Internet. No one knows that we are doing this unless you tell them. We have no marketing budget, and the only reason this show exists is to get grassroots conservatives and libertarians to stop fighting about ancillary crap and focus on the real important issues. At the beginning of that clip, we heard from Representative Sheila Jackson, who was talking about drafting executive orders for Obama to sign. That's not what Congress is supposed to do. Congress is supposed to draft laws within the confines of the Constitution for the president to veto or sign, and then he has to execute them as written. But that's not what's going on here, folks. And O'Reilly really kind of gave a soft, puffy interview, because O'Reilly's not really a conservative, but the audacity of Obama to say that there isn't a smidgen of corruption in the IRS when he is using it as a political tool to go after his enemies, like he did with Dinesh D'Souza. This is the smiley face of soft despotism that is coming, and it isn't about Obama. This has been built for generations by both parties of the duopoly, and this one is just the current meat puppet. But he is the one that's got the most power because of what has happened before him. I mean, think of it this way. Amnesty, as far as we know, is dead in Congress right now because it is a political issue for an election year. So why would it be dead? Well, could it be that maybe they're just going to let Obama use executive orders to grant it so that they can have plausible deniability or take credit for it if it works? This is the kind of sick stuff that's going on, and people like Cruz are out there fighting it. You really need to understand what the rule of law means. Take the classes on conservatism and get more and more people involved, or we're going to see this thing disappear. What do you think of that, Chris?
I love that clip because it's a combination of things. One, I made a little comment while you were talking. You know, I said communist when you were talking about Sheila Jackson. When you look at the way these people have voted and the things they've pushed through in the last 10, 15, 20 years, it is obvious that the rule of law means nothing. It is obvious that sound economics means nothing. You know, I see so much in this country. I see it from a social, you know, platform. I see it from economic platform and a political power platform. Those three dynamics, you know, you look at our society, it's fallen apart. We got half the country. I mean, what is the number? It's just unbelievable. 46 million people in poverty. That's increasing. Food stamps out of this world. Disability, you know, and the fraud around that out of this world. You know, the issue, the latest report that came out that said about 2.5 million people will, you know, not bother to work because of Obamacare benefits, because they get discount or they get paid to be on it instead of, you know, having a job and having to be responsible for it, increasing the welfare mentality in the country. It's terrible. And this has been going on pretty strong. I mean, it's been going on for 100 years, but it's really been going on strong since the 60s, the 70s. They had the first, you know, serious reform in government in the 90s under Speaker Newt Gingrich with the Contract with America, trying to turn this ship around. Newt leaves, and the Republicans go right back to rhinoism, you know, and basically, you know, just wheeling and dealing the corruption away. That's really what it's about. It's about who are your donors, you know, who's getting you reelected, who's got the money, who's got the clout. Okay, what favors do I have to do, you know, to stay in power for 20, 30, 40 years, which could be an argument for term limits. There, you know, we've run this gambit. I always remember when Benjamin Franklin walked out of that building and that lady said, "Sir, what kind of government did you give us?" And Benjamin Franklin turned to her and said, "Ma'am, a republic if you can keep it." And when you study the founding fathers, and I have a book by Barton called The Original Intent, it's another one of those big thick books that you gotta, you know, focus on and read and really understand what was in the hearts and minds of our founding fathers when they put this country together, what freedom and responsibility truly is. Because, I mean, I look at the entertainment world and how it just, even media, you know, I mean, media is just an entertainment world. They don't do news reporting anymore. You know, a little bit of investigation here and there, and once in a while a guy like Brett Baer will do a, you know, a decent segment. I like Hannity when he does his panels because it gets a lot of churn and discussion going, you know, here and there. But it has lost its heart and soul many, many, many years ago. And it's just a programming outlet, just like, you know, television is, just like movies are. And it's sad. It's sad to see that, because without a responsible, sane, sober, stable citizenship, then the government will just continue to get bigger and bigger and bigger, more powerful, make more decisions and make more laws. You know, a lawless nation needs more laws to keep people in order. You know, a moral, disciplined nation of people requires less laws. I think about the difference of the issues we had in schools when I was a child versus what people deal with in schools today. You know, people haven't changed, but something has been washed out of individual responsibility, and it's a huge topic, and it's important. And I think it rolls back to this whole conversation of politics and what's coming down the pike and what we are facing in 2014 and 2016 is, do you want to lose this country to a corrupt oligarchy, corporatism, socialism, communism type rule? Because it's here at your doorstep, on your smartphone, on your computer, tracking you, everything you do down the road. 30,000 drones are going to be in our sky in the next couple of years, even with all the discussion, all the pushback, the Snowden revelations with the NSA, and they haven't batted an eye. They just said, yeah, well, we took care of it, thank you. Okay, go back to sleep now. Hey, Super Bowl, yeah, right on. Hey, the Olympics are on now. Wait, American Idol's coming up. That's really that's how this country responds. I can look back in my lifetime and think about what the citizens of this country would have responded like if the Snowden revelation would have come out 10, 15 years ago or 15, 20 years ago. This country would have been on fire. People would have come out of their recliners and just gone psycho. But somewhere along the line after 9/11, they implemented the TSA and got people used to being, you know, physically and sexually abused to get on an airplane and act like sheep and think like sheep. And 10 years later, you know, we get this stuff exposed. I mean, not just the NSA, but the IRS, the NSA, the AP scandal, shall I go on? You know, it's about 12 different things that are what I would call showstoppers. I mean, I think about, you know, the Nixon impeachment. Two issues. And we got over a dozen with this president, and according to him and Bill O'Reilly, you know, it's over, investigation's over, there's no scandal. Ain't it great? I got to go golf now. And the media, silent. On the NSA, silent. On the AP scandal, silent. On the IRS scandal, barely a mention. It's over, don't you know? Go back to sleep. We will send you a check in the mail because there ain't no damn jobs. That's where we're at. And it's frustrating to me is not the corruption. I mean, I'm reading, I usually got two or three books going on at the same time, and I'm reading a book by McCullough, another book on Rome, besides the Rome series she did. And 15 pages into the book, I'm going, yep, just like America, corrupt, you know, manipulative, you know, wars and hints of wars and got to put this guy down and how they played games in the Senate and, you know, who you were and how much money you had. And, you know, that's why Rome fell. Rule of law is gone. And that's where we're at. And the question is will Americans wake up and demand more from the people that they put in office? It's really what we're looking at coming into 2014. Rex?
Nope, you're absolutely right. And 2014 is very, very important. Look, we have elections every year in this country. Nationally, we've got midterms. Yeah, nationally we got the midterms, and then, of course, every 4 years, presidential election. Turnout is generally fairly low for midterms. You got to increase the turnout, create a force multiplier, and you have to realize that there are people who are so beat down that they don't know how to be free. They're afraid of freedom because it requires responsibility. They would rather get a check in the mail every month without liberty than to actually go out and work for it. The odds of converting them right now are fairly slim. I'm not saying you shouldn't try, but it's fairly slim. What you have to focus on are generally conservative and conservative libertarian voters who tend to vote Republican, but often don't pay attention to the Republican candidate and end up electing rhinos and Democrats just because they had an R after their name. That's who you have to educate. That's why you've got to get this show out there. You know, we don't do this just because we like to rant. We do it because you have to be armed with the information that you need in order to get these other people involved. Because if we could increase the turnout of real conservative voters to vote for real conservatives, we can start rolling back the 100-year road to serfdom and start climbing back up to that shining city on the hill where you are free and you are responsible for that freedom together. Okay, that's what this is about. That's what you have to do. That is your responsibility because you're listening. It's your responsibility for getting this information out there because if you don't do it, nobody else will. Don't just post stuff about how bad Obama is or that he's a communist or that we should impeach him. Be realistic. You need people in the federal government to start checking this right now. 2014 is that chance, but the work begins now. There's people challenging rhinos like Mitch McConnell in Kentucky. Matt Bevin is challenging him. Help Bevin get elected. There's people that are real champions of liberty that are being targeted by Karl Rove's conservative kill pack and the other rhinos like Justin Amash in Michigan. Help Justin Amash. There's Joe Miller up in Alaska. Help Joe. There's people challenging Lindsey Grahamnesty and Bob Bailout Corker. Support those people. That's what you have to do. You can't do it all, but you could do something. And every day, just ask yourself, what three things did I do today to advance the conservative cause of liberty? Did I post 12 articles about Obama? That didn't help. Did I make some phone calls? Did I donate some money to a real conservative? Did I get at least three other people to be aware that there are real conservatives and there are fake rhinos who do the same thing as Democrats and quit falling for the lie that the lesser of two evils is the better choice? If you don't have a real conservative Republican in your district, then elect a Constitution Party guy or a Libertarian Party guy.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that at the national level, it's pretty much the Republican-Democrat duopoly. You ain't going to get any conservative Democrats. I mean, Joe Manson might be about as conservative as they get, and he's barely sane. So you've really got to focus on the real conservatives so that Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, Trey Gowdy, these other guys that are up there fighting for you have more support so that they can get rid of John Boehner, Ohio. Get rid of John Boehner. We need another Speaker of the House.
Please.
Trey Gowdy would be a great Speaker of the House. But it's up to Ohio. Now, if you're not in Ohio, does that mean you got nothing to say? Of course not. You can sign the petition at Tea Party Patriots. You can get more people involved. You can make calls into Ohio. You can send money if you have it. But you got to do something every day. And don't wait until November. That's too late. You got to do it, and you got to do it now. You got to do it again and again and again and again. And it kind of sucks because it's not fun. I don't enjoy it. But we have to do it. And we have to do it now because it's the only way we're going to get our country back. Oh, back from what, Rex? They're always talking about taking the country back. You want to go back to 1955? No. Conservatives don't go backwards. Conservatives go forward. Progressives are the ones who go backwards. We go forward, but we stand on firm ground, and we apply the wisdom of the ages to the contemporary situation. That's what Newt Gingrich talks about in Breakout. And I don't care if you think Newt Gingrich is a neocon or if you love Newt Gingrich. Listen to Newt Gingrich because he's an effective strategist. He knows what he's talking about. Is he always right? No, but he is always effective. And you have to learn from him, because if not for what Newt Gingrich did in the late 90s, we would have been where we are now 15 years ago, because Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton were trying to do the same thing that Barack Obama is doing now. Newt stopped him. Johnny Boehner, Mitch McConnell bend over and give him everything he wants while they fake out uninformed conservatives to keep reelecting them. That's what you have to stop. That is totally up to you.
I agree.
You know who else agrees?
I think that...
Go ahead. Go ahead. Well, I was going to say the Nuge.
Oh. Yeah, no, I want to hear him just as a motivational factor, because we got kind of deep there. But and part of it is attitude. You know, when you listen to Nugent, in fact, I listened to a bunch of his stuff today and a couple of his interviews. I'm just going, yeah, he gets it. Not only does he get it, but he's active. And it doesn't stop him from living his life. You know, he lives life large. He does a lot of different things. He's involved in a lot of different things. You know, he still does concerts. But he's involved in areas where he can be effective. He understands where his strength is at. And I just love his attitude, and it's important. You know, you don't have to, and I find this even for myself, there's just so many things happening at once. Trying to sift through the noise, you know, can be overwhelming and exhausting, but you just got to focus. You got to say, okay, what is it? Where's my strength, whether on a local level, on a state level, or whatever? You know, national level, these are the things that I want to do. I mean, that's what you and I have been doing in, you know, separately and then now together for the last 2 years, since the primary, you know, since we first got involved, both of us were sucked into this thing. And I'm not quite sure how, but I did. I got sucked into it. I got involved. I didn't know crap. I started educating myself. I became motivated off of filling in the gaps, you know, in terms of my understanding of federal politics and election laws and you know, what the hell is broken. You know, how do we go from the Gingrich revolution and the takeover, you know, a majority takeover and a majority reelection to this mess, you know, to what Bush did, you know, five debt ceiling increases, you know, this unending war, you know, all this stuff that's going on. And so I started catching up, so to speak, and filling in those blank spots. And then, so I got a base in, once I got a base of knowledge, I'm going, okay, here's where my strength is at. This is what I'm motivated to do. And so I stay on it, you know, because what the hell else am I going to do? Do you see, you know, is the economy so good right now that you're losing money by not being out there instead of being involved politically? No. You know, it sucks, and it's going to suck for a long time. It's going to get worse, again, because of the decisions that the Fed and the federal government are doing. And so the question is when this thing, you know, this next hiccup comes, and I'm saying that as a nice word, the next crash comes, you know, this is the opportunity to take back the country and move it. A lot of people don't remember this, maybe because they weren't old enough or they weren't born yet. But I lived through the Carter era and the Reagan era as a teenager and then a young adult. And I remember the difference so clearly, you know, in the world I lived in and the opportunities that were at my fingertips, you know. And it was very stark reality. And when Reagan took over, it was a mess. And for anybody who can remember that, I remember sitting in gas lines with my parents. You know, and I remember 17% interest on loans. It was terrible. It was stifling. It was a depression across the land. We had a president that said, you know, wear a sweater in your house. I remember that stuff because I remember my dad coming in going, yeah, the heat's going to be at 68 or 65 at night, you know, and get more blankets and dress warmer. You know, things were bad, and we turned it around. And we didn't just turn it around economically, but there was an attitude change in the country.
There was morning a in America.
Yeah. You know, the city on the shining city on a hill, it was powerful and it was energizing and it impacted everybody's life for 8 years. And for that eight-year period of time, we had what America was supposed to be, moving forward but conserving the principles that give this country the leg up over the rest of the world. So, yeah, let's hear Newt, if you don't – I mean Nuge.
The Nuge, yeah. Look, I think it's a very important point to understand that you know, your life is yours, but we also live together, and we all affect each other, and our government has an effect on us. It's supposed to guarantee your individual rights so that we can order our lives together for a free and virtuous society. But right now, it has got its tentacles in things it has no business doing. It's crowding out the market. It's crowding out the mediating institutions. It's crowding out the churches. It's crowding out charities. It is crowding out the family. And what's going to happen is that the goal here, the end game goal, is that everything is the state, and the state is everything, and liberty dies. And that's where we're going. And not to sound like an alarmist, but don't be flip about it and think, well, that's not going to happen here. It is happening right now. But you're sitting back like a boiling frog. Now, of course, if you're listening to the show, that's not you. But there are people out there like that. They might feel that something's wrong, but they don't quite put their finger on it. You have to educate them, and you have to give them a solution of what to do about it. Don't just bitch at them and tell them, we're responsible for this. Teach them where we've gone wrong and tell them what they can do about it and how they can get involved. I can tell you that during the primaries, when I was telling people to vote for Newt, Newt dropped out. But they didn't understand how the process works and that Newt and Ron Paul could actually still be voted for in the primaries and could gain delegates and go to the convention and win. Of course, Romney just recently admitted that they stole the election, the nomination.
Yeah.
These are the things you've got to inform people. I never wanted to do this. I was just listening to Newt thinking, hey, he's got this. He's in the debates. He's going to win. And then all of a sudden he gets hammered like hell with more money and media time than anybody can have against them. And they shut Ron Paul out, who I also like because I've been reading his stuff for 20 years. Yeah, and then Newt says, you know, I need you to get on Twitter and tweet out 250 gas, and here we are. But the important thing is we have the tools. But these tools don't mean anything if you don't share the information. And so you have to understand that these guys are not your bosses, not Ted Cruz, not Rand Paul, not Mike Lee, not Daryl Issa, not Louis Gohmert, not Justin Amash, not Trey Gowdy. These guys are not your bosses. They are your servants, and they know that. But they're good leaders. And a good leader doesn't dictate to you like the idiot in the White House. A good leader makes more leaders. And if you're listening to my voice, if you're listening to Chris's voice, if you're in Chris's group, if you're listening to this show, you have to be that leader, and you have to lead others to work together. Conservatives and conservative libertarians together, not against each other, together to win this and to roll back this monstrous Leviathan. Here's the Nuge.
A few questions for you about the State of the Union tonight. What was it like being in the chamber next to victims of gun violence?
Gosh, it was painful knowing that we have engineered recidivism, that our mental health system has failed so thoroughly that people who threaten lives and conduct themselves in dangerous, aberrant behavior and have been alerted, the officials have been alerted by co-workers, fellow students, mothers and fathers of these mass murderers. So I am compelled to cry tears of blood that the recidivism and the slaughter by crazy people goes unabated while we're worrying about how many bullets Ted Nugent has. So I feel the pain because the pain is increased when I listen to the State of the Union address because I've watched the president with his predictable, flowery, feel-good, save the children, end world hunger, insanity. And then I either see him do nothing or do the opposite. So the real pain witnessing, and I don't have to be in a room next to him, I've been in rooms with them. I've been a law enforcement agent since 1982. I conduct federal raids with the Heroes of Law Enforcement after paroled recidivistic maggots. So I'm in the belly of the beast when it comes to good over evil. And our court systems and our so-called justice system is not about good over evil. I don't know what it's about, but when you let a man out of his cage who killed his grandmother with a hammer, and then you pretend you're shocked when he shoots a fireman, I think I've landed on the planet of the apes. So I feel horrible that we're going after my guns instead of stopping crime and dangerous behavior. Don't you agree with that?
On the issue of mental health, what would you say to folks that said, look, Ted Nugent said that liberals should be shot like coyotes? That's some of the field threat.
Luke, that's shame on you. Look in the camera and say, I apologize for being a lying b- right over here. Luke, do it, boy. Got the dimples. The dimples are good, but we need an admission that you're
did
a
you
lying
not,
son
did,
of
you not?
I never said that.
What did you say?
Never said that. I said, if a coyote is coming in your house and threatening your children's life, shoot the coyote.
That was
and what would be
liberals,
what would be
was it
not? Not at all.
It was not
at all.
Who is the comparison to?
So Davy Crockett shooting Mexicans at the Alamo, does that mean I'm anti-Hispanic? Give it your best shot. Try to answer that question. I'll help you out. Sounds like first word.
The analogy though was not a comparison to Democrats or liberals.
Not at all. You think I would reference the shooting of human beings? Shame on you. How old are you? Did you ever go to school? Do you hang out with other people? Or are you in an isolation chamber to come up with this nonsense?
Why does Congressman Lonergan have shit for brains?
Because he lied, claiming that somehow I didn't feel sorry for the victims of violent crime.
Is that an appropriate thing
that
to
would
say
take,
about a
that would take
member of Congress
genuine
in a wheelchair?
Fecal material instead of brain matter to actually continue such a vicious, hateful lie. I think he qualifies.
That was Ted Nugent, formerly of Cat Scratch Fever, talking about the State of the Union. Chris?
I'm in a noisy place. I'm in a noisy place. Let me move.
All right.
I was opening the can. I think the reason that he fires me up so much is because he speaks the truth. He doesn't take crap. He calls it a lie when a reporter lies. And he has fun with it because even while he was telling him, you lying sack of crap, he was grinning. You know what I mean? He goes, look in the camera and apologize to people for lying, you know? And that's what I like about Cruz. That's like what I like about Rand. They have their own personalities and how they deal with the manipulation of the leftist media, you know, in terms of how whenever they try to trick them up or catch them on a phrase or say they said something when they take it out of context, and both of them have their own way of dealing with it. But you can't counter lies and bullcrap and a character assassination if you don't know who you are. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges that we have with so many of the high-ranking Republicans is they have acted like Democrats for the last 10, 15, 20 years, so they really can't stand on anything, so they can't fight the good fight. And I really believe that that's why people, when Rand did his filibuster and then Cruz came on and found his pace, you know, in the marketplace, you know, and everybody gets so fired up and people get excited about people like that or Gowdy, you know, in the hearings. Whatever the case may be, you know, you pick your hero. Why we gravitate to those kind of people? Because they're fighting for us. They're fighting for the things that we believe. And the young gentleman, Matt, that you had on earlier was talking about, well, initially I didn't really know. I kind of knew what I believed, but I really didn't know the details of it. I didn't really have the black and white about who I am and what I believe for my country and what I'm willing to fight and die for. You know, and I think that it's a sad state of affair on our educational system that, you know, kids can get out of high school at 18 years old and not even have a clue how their country runs or what they believe besides, you know, who their favorite Facebook group is or their favorite movie star or their favorite musician or sports figure. You know, they're so distracted compared to years in the past in this country that we actually taught our kids some things about how to be an adult, a citizen, financial responsibility, you know, responsible, you know, those types of things. They have destroyed a couple generations in this country, and they've done it on purpose. That's the scary part. You know, one is to look at a problem and go, wow, that's a big problem in our country. And then the other one is to go back and go, wow, this was a plan. And that's where I think people need to wake the hell up is this is a real plan, and they've been at it for 100 years, and they just about finished it. And the only thing that's holding them back from it are things like the Liberty Movement or the Tea Party Movement or, you know, Heritage or, you know, a handful of people in Congress that are fighting like hell for you. You know, for you, for your Bill of Rights that were given to you by your creator, not by the government. Because if the government takes these things away, then it's all depends on who you know and how you're plugged in and the haves and the have-nots. I'm telling you, it's ugly. Just talk to anybody. I, you know, lived in Alaska half my life, and I actually had a friend up there that used to be an investigative reporter in communist Russia who escaped Russia. And when you sit down and you talk to people who've lived it, or what, or you know, even like Cuban friends or whatever, I know a lot of people from all over the world, but when you talk to people about what it was like in that era, and or that country or under that ruler, it's pretty frightening. And I think the problem with Americans is we've had it so easy for so long, we just don't think it could happen here. Well, it's happening right now. You have a media that is complacent on all this stuff that's coming out every day around the world. If you go out outside of U.S. media, you can find all kinds of stuff about the NSA abuses you will never hear in your media here. And that's what you have to ask yourself is why? Why is it that the media is not talking to us about one of our primary fundamental rights, constitutional rights that's been abused and offended, and they're not going to change anything? They're going to make a couple little, you know, peripheral adjustments and make it sound like they did something, and they're doing nothing. They're not spying on you to protect you from terrorists. I mean, if you believe that, you're an idiot. I'm sorry, you are. You know, this is bad. And so the question is will we be the U.S. of A, or are we going to be the USSS of A? And that's we're at that line right now. I don't know what it's going to take to move people, but you know, people need to be moved, and they need to figure out what they believe and what they want the country to look like in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, because the movement's on. Fundamental change is here, baby. You're up.
Yeah, well, I mean, everything you said is spot on, and yeah, we have had it relatively easy here. It's part of being at the top of the Federal Reserve global fiat scheme food chain, but you're being ripped off while they're ripping off the rest of the world too. The problem with these things, and you mentioned earlier, you know, the 70s malaise and stagflation and misery index, and then how Reagan came in and it was mourning in America again. And today on his 103rd birthday, we should, you know, really think about that, because that's what we did back then, being a decade away from the final sever with gold as our money. Here we are now 42 years from that date, and the math is going to spin out of control. The quantitative easing into infinity, the incompetence of Janet Yellen at the Fed, the devaluation of the currency, the confiscation of your retirement funds into Obama's MIRA is coming, because they have to sell more debt and more paper to float the scheme, and when that fails, the only option is war. And they're already ginning up for war with Iran again. We are funding al-Qaeda in Syria against Bashar al-Assad, and we're teaming up with Iran against al-Qaeda in Iraq. It's literally insane, and it's because they need to finance all sides in all wars in order to distract you. Because when you're in a war mentality, you're willing to give up your liberty for some false sense of security, and it's going to be horrible. This is not going to be like World War One or World War Two. It's a different kind of a global war. This is not going to be like Weimar Germany with inflation. It's a different kind of inflation, but the fundamentals are the same. You're being robbed of your wealth and your liberty. And the poor in this country are the ones who are the most are worst off. Maybe they got some freebies right now, and they got some kind of comfortable security, but they're the ones that are getting plundered the most, and the middle class is being decimated intentionally. This income gap that they keep talking about, especially the one Obama likes to talk about, they're the ones creating it through the Keynesian corporatism that they've instituted, that you are so mired in that sometimes you can't tell what's what and how to get out of it. Learn. Go to Mises. Go to Acton.org. Go to Liberty Free Think University. Go to the Leadership Institute. Get informed. Get more people informed. What we did in the 80s, and it wasn't perfect. There was a lot of deficit spending. Tip O'Neill fake Reagan out with promising him spending cuts if he gave them tax increases that never came. They promised border security if there was amnesty that never came. And now this time, the president wants these things. The Democrats want these things, and the rhinos are handing it to them. And anybody who stands up as a real conservative is being pilloried and attacked and called an arsonist, an anarchist, and all sorts of things. But there's more of us than there is of them. Unfortunately, we're not represented because we haven't been active enough. And that's what you have to do. That's what this is about. So get the information out there. Share this show. Share the information. Share Freethink University. Share the Leadership Institute. Take the courses. Get other people involved. Because now is the time, when things are looking as bad as they are, that we can strike a victory for the conservative cause of liberty. Now, Trog and I are going to be off this coming Sunday. We were off last Sunday for the Seattle Stoners versus the Denver Dopeheads, and that wasn't really worth it. But we're off this Sunday. Please catch our re-airing of a great show, Spies Like Us. Trog just mentioned the NSA and the abuses. We talk about that. Spies Like Us. That's this Sunday, 9 p.m. We'll be back live next Thursday for another Liberties Thursday, and every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern. In the meantime, don't let the news get you down, and don't think that the lies are going to deter us. This is the year for the conservative cause of liberty. Don't give up. This is Rex and Trog, signing off.
The thunder of liberty rumbles on.
And I think it's particularly appropriate to talk about breakout here, because in 1964, in October, when Reagan made his first great national television speech, at that time on behalf of Barry Goldwater, he says towards the very end of the speech, "It is not about right versus left, it is about up or down. Down towards the totalitarian system, the serfdom, the slavery, up towards individual liberty and individual opportunity." And I think, in a sense, Breakout is a very Reaganite book, in that it captures something that he understood very, very well. And one of my major goals is to replace right versus left with future versus past. And I think you'll see why in the next few minutes. You know, two of our greatest leaders, Abraham Lincoln and Ronald Reagan, exemplify personally in their lives the concept of breakout. In Lincoln's case, Reagan is very similar. Reagan's born in 1911. The first commercial airline flight in the United States is 3 years later. When Reagan's 3 years old, a plane goes from St. Petersburg to Tampa, Florida, takes 23 minutes, and never gets above 50 feet over the bay. Those of you who've been to Tampa, St. Pete, you can imagine this. This is the first commercial flight. By the time Reagan is 10 years old, we have the first commercial radio station, WKDKA, in Pittsburgh. His first big successful job is in radio, first in eastern Iowa and then in Des Moines. Reagan goes on. The first talkie is made in 1928. Reagan goes into the movies when talkies are about 8 years old. He's in the movies at the very beginning of Technicolor. He then gets into television, which is, he's 35 when television becomes commercially available. And then ultimately he is on color television, which did not even exist when he first went into television. So, and finally, as president, he reports to the nation on the explosion of the shuttle Challenger. So again, when Reagan talked about "you ain't seen nothing yet," and when Reagan talked about progress, he had personally in his lifetime lived through it. I was up at the ranch when we were filming Rendezvous with Destiny, and on the wall at the ranch is Reagan in the late 1930s in a U.S. Army Cavalry Reserve unit, riding horses. So he literally lived in his lifetime from the speed of the horse cavalry, which he not only portrayed in movies, but he served it. And he's a very serious person about this stuff. He's studied a great deal about the military to see all of modern capabilities. So imagine being president, looking at what America was capable of in the 1980s, having in the back of your mind, having served as a junior officer in a cavalry unit with horses. And so again, he'd lived through a series of things that justified being called a breakout by any reasonable standard. Now, what I'm really struck with, I first got into working on this, in fact, in 1981. Dick Cheney was then the policy committee chairman for the House Republicans, and in the summer of 81, he came back from a meeting with David Stockman, who was Reagan's director of the budget. And Cheney laid out for me what the long-term problems financially for the U.S. were. You know, what was going to happen to the share of gross domestic product, to health care, and to retirement programs, and so forth. And I looked at these numbers, which were all very large and very sobering, and I said, it is impossible to solve this problem within the framework of the current system. You will never have the political authority to apply the level of pain that a normal solution would require. In 1981. In the mid-1990s, having written the contract with America and won the first majority in 40 years, we made the decision to balance the federal budget. And we imposed it. The news media thought it was hopeless. The Clinton White House initially resisted it totally. Then we got into a fight about whether to do it for real or whether to do it as a phony device. It took two shutdowns of the government to get their attention. It was a very rough and tumble fight. There's a very funny scene which they showed in CNN the other night when we were looking at the State of the Union. You can see it's in January of 96 after the shutdown. President Clinton comes in, and as you know, the president comes in and he always hands a copy of the speech to the vice president and to the Speaker of the House. So if you watch, anytime they come in, there's this formal transmission of the text. And so he gives Gore a copy of the speech, and he hands me a much smaller envelope. And I opened it, and it said, to Speaker Newt Gingrich from President William Jefferson Clinton, you are right, I resign. And I'm reading and breaking up laughing. I show Gore. Clinton turns around and goes, oh, I gave you the wrong envelope. Takes it back. And frankly, if the current president had a little bit of a sense of humor, we'd get a lot more done in Washington. It's helpful to be dealing with human beings, even if you disagree at times, and to recognize each other's units. But we produced the only four consecutive balanced budgets in your lifetime. Now, how do we do it? First, we passed welfare reform. And welfare reform, by the time we passed it, initially proposed by Ronald Reagan in the 1966 governor's race, passed by us in 1996. By the time we passed it, 92% of the country agreed that it had to be reformed, including 88% of the people in welfare. It is the most successful social reform in your lifetime. More people left poverty. We reduced the number of children in poverty by a larger number in the late 90s than at any other time in American history. And it is astonishing to me to watch Barack Obama, whose policies have pushed people into poverty, dare to talk about inequality when it is his government's policies which guarantee inequality by crippling the poor and trapping them into bad programs. We've had a 50-year experiment. In 1964, on January 8th, Lyndon Baines Johnson in the State of the Union said, we are going to declare war on poverty. In October of 1964, Ronald Reagan said, big government is hopelessly destructive. Now, we've run a 50-year experiment. As Reagan said one time, we declared war on poverty and poverty won. It is impossible to look at the $16 trillion government bureaucrats have spent on the war on poverty and not reach a conclusion this is a profoundly misguided project and that bureaucrats are incapable of achieving the level of change needed for people to rise and the people to get out of poverty. By contrast, the Reagan programs of less regulation, lower taxes, more entrepreneurship, speaking well of small business, created more jobs than any other program in modern times. It actually peaked in the Clinton years. We passed the largest capital gains tax cut in American history while I was Speaker. And it worked exactly as Reagan said it would. We also opposed unnecessary regulations. And it worked exactly as Reagan said it would. You now find yourself trapped in the longest period of bad economy since the Great Depression, and it's not an accident. You have a dumb tax policy with a dumb bureaucracy, with dumb programs in general, led by a man who is totally tone-deaf and has no clue about how America operates. And this is a huge problem.
It is an honor and a joy to be with you to celebrate the 44th anniversary of your 39th birthday. I hope to be here to celebrate the 51st anniversary of the same birthday. Indeed, if you were thinking of running again to see us into the 21st century, I'd be even better pleased. I note, President Reagan, from one of your books, that in 1987, you heard one presidential candidate say that what this country needed was a president for the 90s. You were set to run again because you thought, he said, a president in his 90s. And you were... Well, for us, hope springs eternal. All it needs is to repeal the 22nd Amendment to the Constitution. Sir, you strode into our midst at a time when America needed you most. This great country had been through a period of national malaise, bereft of any sense of moral direction. Through it all, throughout 8 of the fastest moving years in memory, you were unflappable and unyielding. You brushed off the jibes and jabs of your jealous critics. With that Irish twinkle and that easy homespun style, which never changed, you brought a new assurance to America. You are not only America's president, important as that is, you were a great leader. In a time of average men, you stood taller than anyone else. With a toughness unseen for a long time, you stood face to face with the evil empire. And with an unexpected diplomacy, which confused your foes and even some of your friends, you reached out to that empire, perhaps no longer evil, but still formidable. You met its leaders on their turf, but on your terms. In a time of politicians, you proved yourself a statesman. And that leadership, that faith in freedom and enterprise, brought about a renewal of this great country. America was back, and the free world became a safer place. It was not only that you were a great communicator, and you were the greatest, but that you had a message to communicate. The message that had inspired the founding fathers, the message that has guided this nation from its birth. The essence of good government is to blend the wisdom of the ages with the circumstances of contemporary times. And that is what you did. Not since Lincoln or Winston Churchill in Britain has there been a president who has so understood the power of words to uplift and to inspire. You reached beyond partisanship to principles, beyond our own selves to our very souls. You reached for and touched, as Lincoln had said so long before you, the better angels of our nature. Leadership is more than budgets and balance sheets, more than the policy of public measures. It is a matter of moral purpose. And that moral realm is reached by that insight and rhetoric of which only the truly great are capable.
I can't tell you how thrilled Nancy and I are to be here with you tonight to celebrate, as Margaret said, the 44th anniversary of my 39th birthday. Haley told me he was going to gather a few friends for dinner tonight, but I had no idea. Before I get started here, I want to thank my dear friend Margaret Thatcher for being part of yet another important milestone. Another important milestone in my life, and for those very kind words. As most of you know, Margaret and I go back quite a ways. We met at a time before she became prime minister and I became president. From the moment we met, we discovered that we shared quite similar views of government and freedom. Margaret ended our first meeting by telling me we must stand together. And that's exactly what we've done in the years since. As friends, and as political allies. Margaret Thatcher is one of the giants of our century. Her many achievements will be appreciated more and more as time goes on and history is written. For me, she has been a staunch ally, my political soulmate, a great visionary, and a dear, dear friend. Thank you, Margaret, for being with us tonight. I would also like to convey my personal appreciation to Haley Barbour. Haley, you and the entire Republican National Committee are doing an excellent job keeping the heat on the Democrats at both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue. Haley, back when I hired you to work on my White House staff, I suspected you might amount to something someday. I must say that returning to Washington today really brought back memories. As our plane headed toward the airport, I looked down on the White House, and it was just like the good old days. The Rose Garden, the South Lawn, David Gergen. I looked over a couple of blocks, and there was the Internal Revenue Service, bigger than I ever remembered it. Then I looked down at the enormous United States Post Office building. I could just see the excitement on the faces of the bureaucrats, knowing they would soon be managing our national health care system. Up on Capitol Hill, I saw that big white dome bulging with new tax revenues. I instinctively reached for my veto pen and thought to myself, go ahead, make my day. You may have seen President Clinton draw his own veto pen on television just last week. The difference is that his pen doesn't have any ink in it. Unless, of course, you're talking about red ink. And we all know the Democrats have plenty of that. All of you have made our day just by being here. It's a pleasure to see so many familiar faces and those who work so hard for the grand old party, which reminds me, I need to set the record straight once and for all on a certain matter that keeps coming up. I have to admit, I'm very flattered by all the telephone calls, the letters, the signs, and especially those bumper stickers. But with all I've got going in my life right now, I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to run again for president in 1996. However, I have not ruled out the possibility of running in the year 2000. I hesitate to ask, but if I did run, could I count on you again for your support?